Now the author of the oh-so-popular Diary of a Wimpy Kid series, Jeff Kinney. The books describe the everyday trials and tribulations of Greg Heffley, an egotistical 12-year-old struggling to fit in at school, desperate to take the next steps into adolescence, and plagued by his attention-grabbing baby brother, Manny, and evil older brother, Roderick. Besides being an author, Jeff Kinney is an online game developer and designer and a number one New York Times best-selling author for his 9-book Wimpy Kid series. Time magazine has named him one of the 100 most influential people in the world. Today, he is married and the father of 2 sons. And Jeff, so good to have you here. Welcome to Kansas City.
Well, thanks for having me.
A tour bus? Really? You pulled in? It's a parking parked across the street? That's just amazing.
You know, it's the only way to go. It's really fun to travel in the bus and to finish up with stops and hop back in. And we've got a lot of stops this time. We're really trying to pack it in with about 7 stops a day. So that's really unusual to do it that way. And so it's great to have a bus to just have as a home.
So 7 stops a day and 50 stops altogether, right?
That's right, yes.
It's going to take you from where to where? Across the country.
It's going to take us from St. Louis to up through Michigan and across to Toronto and then back down to New York.
You know, the latest count I saw of you, Jeff, is you have sold more than 50 million books. Is that the current number, or am I shorting you a little bit there?
It's at 83 million now, so it's
83
really,
million.
It's really cool.
Well, a million here and a million there, and who's counting anymore, right? So why is this series proving so popular? What's been your secret to all this?
I think leveling with kids. I didn't write the books for kids to begin with, so I was writing for grown-ups who wanted to remember what it was like to be a kid. And so the byproduct of that is that I created a series that doesn't talk down to kids, and I think kids respond to that.
And both parents like them and kids like them too then, right?
I think so. It's gratifying to me to see that the books are finding the intended audience through the kids. So, you know, my sensibilities are really G-rated anyway, so it works for both. It's family friendly.
Well, you've said, despite the fact you've sold 83 million books, you've said in interviews that doing the series is a hobby for you, something that you do on the side. Is that really the case?
Yeah, it's not my day job. I have a day job at a website called Pop Tropica, which is a site that
very popular website.
Yeah, it's a virtual world for kids, and that's my, you know, my kind of regular 9-to-5 days are spent on Pop Tropica, and then I squeeze in Wimpy Kid whenever I can.
Well, I know we've been getting phone calls already from kids and parents who want to ask Jeff Kinney some questions about his Diary of a Wimpy Kid series. If you want to call us right now, 816-235-2888 is our phone number. Our email address is up to date at kcur.org or go to KCUR's Facebook page. And I should point out that Jeff will be appearing this afternoon at 4 o'clock at Unity Temple on the Plaza. Doors open at 3. Call Renaday Books and Fairway for tickets, 913-384-3126, and we're told it's going to be very crowded this afternoon at Unity Temple. Again, 4 o'clock today, Unity Temple on the Plaza. For tickets for Renaday Books, 913-384-3126. So what's keeping you busy during the day? Tell us a little more about what your day job is.
My day job at Pop Tropica is I'm the creative director.
Yeah.
It's a site I created, but it's staffed by people in Utah, in Boston primarily. And so what I do is I write stories for kids on islands. There are these big quests that kids go on. And the islands span different genres like mystery and sci-fi and even a little bit of horror in a way. But it's all kids safe and a lot of fun. And, you know, it's wholesome as well, I think.
Well, what keeps you so embedded in the world of kids? I mean, what is it? Because your own kids, how old are they now?
7 and 10.
So they're not even middle school age yet.
Right.
And what keeps you so embedded in that world?
I think I've always had a kid's sensibilities in a way. You know, my diet is pretty awful. I eat really basic foods. I like
Such
junk
as
cereal.
What? Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Like
I mean,
Cocoa Puffs.
I'm getting better these days. My wife is real, you know, really health-minded. But I, you know, I gravitate to things that kids like, basically. And so, yeah, Fruit Loops and things like that are, you know, used to be a big part of my life.
But how do you find yourself and how do you manage to reconnect with middle school kids?
I think
that's a real particular point of time for most kids.
Yeah, what I like about middle school kids are that in a way it's sort of the last bastion of childhood. It's the last moment when a kid can kind of be a kid. And I think that most kids have this aspirational feeling of wanting to be older. You know, any kid that's reading 17 magazine is like 13 or 12.
Yeah.
And I think that kids just want to reach that next level because it represents more freedom. And, you know, more power and control over their lives. But I think that being a kid is a good thing. And I certainly look back on my own childhood with fondness and miss it.
But where do you get the material?
A lot of it has come from my own life. And, you know, the DNA of my childhood is woven into these books. They're not, you know, they're fiction, but there's a lot of truth in them. And, you know, and some of it's from my imagination and, you know, sometimes things happen to me in my adult life as well.
But you've done a bunch of these books. I mean, are you scrambling for material or does it just come to you fairly easily?
I'm always scrambling for material.
Yeah.
It's very difficult for me. And I think in a way, the challenge in my books, and it's a challenge I really relish, is to keep them on an even keel, is to produce at the same, you know, to make the books very similar to one another in terms of the storytelling and the gag writing and things like that. But most books, like if you have a series like Harry Potter or a sci-fi series like The Hunger Games, they have to keep raising the stakes, you know, each time. And then eventually the books have to end. And my books are very different because my characters are cartoon characters. They're not really literary characters.
Yeah.
And so in a way, my challenge is to always keep them the same. I have to reset the stage each time I'm done with a book.
Do you ever feel the need to sort of have Greg graduate from middle school and go on with the rest of his life or not?
I don't. I realize in the fifth book, which is called The Ugly Truth, you know, that Greg is a cartoon character. And in fact, I use puberty as a metaphor for the fact that he's a cartoon character, whereas Greg's peers are all getting older or looking, you know, older and getting facial hair and pimples and things like that. Greg is confused as to why he can't, you know, he's not moving on or taking the next step. And it's because he's a cartoon character. He can't.
Jeff Kinney is our guest. He's the author of the very popular Diary of a Wimpy Kid series. Our phone number here again, 816-235-2888, and our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. Kim from Peculiar. Kim, good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to say thank you so much for this series. I have a 13-year-old boy who absolutely hated to read, and roughly 3 years ago, my brother-in-law got him the first book and said, "You need to try this. Just try it and see what you think." He read the book two or three times, so we got him the next one, and he read it, and then read both of them again. He has read every book at least five or six times each, and he is just waiting for this next one to come out. And I just want to say thank you, because with him reading these books and realizing, oh, you know, I can try new things, I will like them, that has opened up a whole new world of reading for him, and he's actually more willing to try different things now than he was before that he was introduced to this series. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
You know, and Jeff, I'm guessing you've heard that kind of comment from, you know, moms and dads grateful to you for getting their kids into reading before.
I have. It's very gratifying to hear that. You know, I like to think that my books are not the be-all and end-all of literature, but they might be a gateway to bigger and better things. So I love hearing that a kid read my books and then they moved on to something more challenging.
Well, that's great. Kim, thank you for the call. John from Kansas City, Missouri. John, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Kinney, I just wanted to tell you, I mean, I kind of echo the previous caller's announcement that my middle school daughter, who really wasn't into reading very much, really got into it. And I just want to know if is there a whole bunch more going to be coming? I mean, because I actually enjoy them myself. So.
Well, thank you so much. You know, I'm planning on at least three more books. It'll be a struggle, but I often wonder, like, does it devalue a book series to keep adding titles? I used to think, you know, I want a classic series. I want something that sits on the shelves. And I always thought, you know, if you're going to do that, you have to have like three or five and don't go beyond that because it's pulp after that. But I feel like that's a good challenge, is to write like 10 quality books in the series and maybe more. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I wish I could come see you, but I have to work. But I wanted to tell you thank you very much and keep up the good work.
I appreciate it.
John, thank you. And, you know, you went online with this series first before bringing out in book form. Why did you go that way?
Well, I remember the day that I discovered something called Flash, which is a it's sort of a computer graphics program for publishing on the web. And at the time, I was a struggling cartoonist who couldn't get past the gatekeepers of the newspaper syndicates. And, you know, I just didn't have a chance at all. And when I found Flash, I realized that I could reach an audience directly without gatekeepers on the web. Even if it was a small audience, it would be, you know, something that I could do on my own. So I stood up and circled the day on my calendar because I realized my life had changed. And so when I started publishing online, I was lucky enough to publish it on a website that, you know, my company are held. But I was able to get 12 million kids reading the book in the first year and about 20 a few months later. So that was great to reach an audience directly.
Well, for aspiring cartoonists, how did that happen? How did that many kids gravitate to the website to begin reading this thing? Was it just word of mouth, or how does that happen?
It was actually, we just happened to have a website that was highly trafficked. And even if we had put tic-tac-toe up in that slot, I think we would have gotten a lot of kids. So I really lucked out with that, of finding a job where, you know, that happened to have such a large audience online.
There must have been a moment for you, you know, Jeff, when the light bulb went off in your head and you began to think, I've got something here. When was that for you?
That was the moment that I came up with the title Diary of a Wimpy Kid and you know, could kind of see a different path for myself. That's when I knew that was going to be my opus, and I, you know, for good or for bad, that I was going to follow that idea all the way through. And I really took my time with it and developed it over 8 years before I showed a page to anyone, because I figured, you know, it was a good project for me. I think it's there's this book called Outliers, actually, by Malcolm Gladwell, which is called Outliers, the Story of Success. And his idea is that there's a 10,000-hour rule for anybody to become an expert over something. And that equates to about 10 years. And I would say that was true with these books, is I really wasn't ready to show anything to anyone for 8 years. And, you know, so I was glad to be able to take my time and develop that idea.
What were you doing for those 8 years? I mean, how did that work, and how did you sort of manage that yourself to spend that much time and be that patient with your own progress?
Well, I was working, you know, I have the same job I had before all this started. And I just I was just working as actually, I've had a few different jobs. I was a medical software engineer and a newspaper layout person, and now a game designer. So I just had my day job and treated this as something I was doing on the side and, you know, working on as a passion project.
And what were you doing during those 8 years? How were you developing, and how did you see yourself progressing?
Sure. I spent about 4 years filling out a single idea book. It was a sketchbook. It had 77 pages in it. And I just packed it with ideas and jokes. And, you know, it really did take me 4 years to fill that out. And then when I was done with that, I took another 4 years to just kind of iterate on the characters. Because something I don't like is when I see in cartoons that the characters change over time. Like if you look at early Peanuts strips and later ones, you can see that the character is changing. And I always felt like as a reader that broke the spell for me, because you would look at some of the old ones and say, well, that's the old stuff and this is the new stuff. And I like for a character to find its form and then stay there. So I really just took a lot of time reworking the characters and then writing the first draft.
Were you showing your work to others, trying to get some feedback? Were you showing it to your wife? How did you get feedback on what you were doing?
I didn't show anything to anyone. I remember this was odd. I was driving to work one day and I saw a big billboard, and it had a Benjamin Franklin quote, and it said, "Well done is better than well said." And God only knows who paid to have that billboard put up. You know, there was no advertising with it or anything, but I like the message that you know, don't say you're going to be a writer. Just, you know, try to become a writer. And, you know, and I think there's something about when you tell people what you're going to do and then you don't do it, it's a sort of soul, it hurts your soul a little bit, you know. So I didn't want to really tell people what I was doing.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here with Jeff Kinney, author of the Diary of a Wimpy Kid series. Again, his latest installment in the series is just on its way out now. You can see and hear Jeff Kinney this afternoon at 4 o'clock at Unity Temple on the Plaza. Call Rainy Day Books and Fairway for tickets, 913-384-3126. If you want to give us a call right now, if you want to ask Jeff a question, please do, 816-235-2888. And our email address, UpToDate at KCUR.org. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to UpToDate on KCUR. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. This hour, we're visiting with Jeff Kinney. He's the author of the ever-popular Diary of a Wimpy Kid series. If you want to join our conversation right now, you can do so, 816-235-2888, and our email address, UpToDate at KCUR.org. Jeff's latest installment in the series is out. It's titled The Third Wheel. Is it actually out now?
It is today.
It's there.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm very excited.
Have a big stack of them on your big bus across the street, right?
Yeah.
I'd love that bus. Yeah, I just was really struck. You were mentioning that you had sought to become a newspaper columnist, and it didn't work. Why not? And how hard was it for you that that didn't work out for you?
Yeah, I wanted to be a newspaper cartoonist, but the odds are so poor,
oh,
first of all.
Tremendous.
You know, nowadays syndicates only put out about one strip a year, and it's very difficult. You know, and they get maybe, I don't know, 300 submissions a week, some high number. You know, so the odds aren't good. And my style, I came to realize that my style wasn't professional enough and that I couldn't get there with any amount of practice.
What were you short?
I can't control my pen the way a professional can. I can't see things the way that professionals can. And so what I did was I realized that if I was going to do this, I was going to have to act like I was a kid. I was going to have to write from the perspective of a kid. So that's how the whole idea for Diary of a Wimpy Kid came about.
Was that your idea?
Yeah.
And it worked.
It did.
Those things never work,
right?
But it worked.
It
yeah.
worked. You know, it really, it's been, you know, shocking to me that the book ever got published and that it sold so many copies. And, you know, ever since 2007, when the books first came out, my life has just been this very strange ride. And, you know, I've gotten to meet three presidents. And
I was going to ask you about that, yeah.
And all sorts of different things, you know. So
you and Barbara Bush are big buddies, right?
I've sat next to her eating lunch, I think, about four times. So it's been pretty crazy.
Yeah, I imagine that's pretty. Well, when you had this idea of drawing the series from the perspective of a kid, where were you? Were you remember where you were when you thought, okay, that's going to be the way I've got to make this work?
Yeah, I was actually, it was a pretty low point in my life. I was married before, and I, you know, it was just in the middle of a divorce. I was alone, you know, it was January in Massachusetts. I was lived in a terrible little apartment, and I got this idea, and, you know, and then I sort of just wrote it out for a long time.
And there you had it, and off you went.
Yeah.
You have said that you're a slow drawer. It takes you a while to sketch your characters. Even now, are you sort of ponderous at the whole thing?
Yeah, I'm not a quick illustrator to begin with. And then my drawings are they're very technical. Even though they're doodles, they are they're kind of very specific. And so each one takes me about an hour, and there's 350 of them in a book. So this year I had to do all of my drawings in 1 month, and I'm not sure exactly how the math works out, but I drew for a minimum of 13 hours a day and a maximum of 17 for a whole month, and that was tough.
And are you plotting the whole thing out, Jeff, as you work through a book? Do you plan it out ahead of time and you know exactly where you're going?
I don't. I don't often know what the plot of the book is until about a week and a half before the first draft is due. And sometimes I don't even know the theme. And that's because I'm a joke writer. You know, what I do is I write tons of jokes. I need about, I think, 350 joke ideas per book. And then I whittle those down and I see what I've got left. And I put them in order, basically, and that's my plot. So I often don't know what the plot is until very late in the game.
Oh, that's just amazing to me. Yeah. Tell me about having lunch with Barbara Bush.
Well, she's exactly who you'd expect her to be. She's very frank and very intelligent.
Nonsense.
Right. And, I got to meet President George H.W. Bush as well, and he's sharp as a tack, you know.
What occasions were these that you were sitting down next to Barbara Bush and dining with former President Bush?
Right. They were Barbara Bush Literary Foundation events that benefit, they promote literacy with families. And they've been really great events. That's why I keep coming back. So I've been to about four of them, and I got to meet George W. Bush as well. I got to have lunch in his home, so with the whole Bush clan. So it was really cool. Yeah.
What was that? What did you do? Was it fun? Was it intimidating, or was it okay? Or
well, it was bizarre to see, like, my wife was sitting at one table and I was at another, and then to see the names on the little nameplates, and it said, George H.W. Bush, Condoleezza Rice, Julie Kinney. It's like that's how weird it was.
One of those moments, right?
Did
you have things to talk about? Were they interested in your series, or do they know much about your series?
They did, in varying degrees, and the younger Bush daughters are educators, or they're involved with kids. But I think that it's just been. It's just been a surreal experience. What I asked Barbara Bush about was, what was it like? How did you try to make life normal for your kids?
I was going
to
ask you that. Yeah. I read that somewhere.
Because I live in a town called Plainville, and we really try to keep things very normal for our kids and kind of mask them from the surreality of everything.
Sure.
And she said, actually, she embraced it. She embraced the specialness of her life and really didn't try to mask that from her kids at all. And I thought that was interesting.
Interesting point of view.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah. And Laura Bush has made what literacy and kids reading such an important part of her sort of work in the White House. And even afterwards, she was just here a couple of years ago talking about that. Yeah.
That's right. I got to meet her as well. So it feels like you're meeting all of these historic characters in a way, when you're up close and personal. And then we got to meet the Obamas a few months ago in the White House. So that was
really.
And the daughters are both readers of the book. So
no kidding.
Yeah, it's a bipartisan book series.
Where did you meet the Obamas? What part of the White House were you in?
It was I'm embarrassed to say I don't know what the name of the room is, but it's the room that they greet visitors, and you take one of those formal pictures, and then and we got to pet their dog and, and everything. We have the same dog as them, a Portuguese water dog, so. That was really cool, and the older daughter said to me, that she's a huge fan of the books and that I should keep writing. So that was inspiring to me because she is older.
Do you find those situations intimidating, or is it becoming old hat to you now? You've done it a bunch of times.
I actually do sometimes feel intimidated, like in the case of George W. Bush. He came right up to myself and his wife in his driveway, and he's talking to us, and it was just strange because you don't realize how often you see a president, how many times you see their image, and then when they're right there in front of you, eight inches away, it feels like they're almost like too famous, So it's so I just wanted to have my moment and then withdraw and then tell people about it rather than be in the moment.
Well, if you're a fan of the Diary of a Wimpy Kid series and want to tell us about it, give us a shout, 816-235-2888. Again, our email address, uptodate@kcur.org, or tweet us at @kcuruptodate. I gather you spent a lot of time reading cartoons as a kid. Am I right about that?
I did. My father was a comic book collector, and he treasured these comics by Carl Barks. The Donald Duck and Uncle Scrooge comics from the 1950s and 60s. And they were these tales that were really epic. In fact, I think that almost all of my frame of reference for culture and geography and history comes from those comics. And those comics, I think that those are the best stories that I've ever read. And so I think those made a deep imprint on me.
Yeah, and do you still have some of those?
I do, and they just started releasing those comics in hardcover again, and I'm so happy because I can share them with my sons now.
Yeah, yeah. I read that you spent, after spending almost 8 years on that first book, before you showed it to the publisher in New York. How did the publisher react once you got to that point and you actually showed your work? Because you must have been a little anxious about that.
Yeah, I was.
After 8 years of effort. Yeah.
Yeah, I went to New York Comic Con. And I walked around with my sample packet, and nobody wanted to, you know, see it. So I didn't really share it with anyone. And then I came across a booth of a publisher who I knew had published a comic called Mom's Cancer, which started off online. And this was Abrams, and I sort of stopped in my tracks and engaged with the person there who sold me the book. Yeah. And then I said, well, I've got this thing that I want to show you. And I showed my sample packet to the editor, and he looked at it. And I'd say within about 30 seconds, he said, this is exactly what we're looking for.
You're kidding me.
Yeah.
That never happens.
I know, it never happens, right? So, I didn't get an agent or anything. I just I don't know if it was luck or, you know, divine intervention or what, but you know, I felt very, very fortunate that.
So you were at Comic-Con when you showed this thing to him?
Yeah, which was, you know, it's a huge floor with, you know, tens of thousands of people, and it was oversold, so I had to sneak in through the side door. And, you know, it was very fortuitous that I got to meet my editor when I did. He was just the perfect person to find.
Where was he sitting? Where was he? How did you find him?
He was at a booth, you know, like everybody else, just selling a few books that they had published. And, you know, it's also, you know, very fortunate that of the three people that were working the booth that day, that I talked to him first. And Charlie Kochman is he's a real expert in comics, and he's got, roots that go back to, you know, Mad Magazine and DC Comics and lots of other different places. So he's friends with Jules Pfeiffer and a lot of legendary cartoonists. So he was the right person for me to find.
That's just amazing. And he looked at it for about 30 seconds and looked up at you and said, this is what we want.
Yeah. And he didn't even read it. He just looked at it. He looked at it visually.
And what did you present? Was it all bound in a book, or was it loose pages, or how was it?
It was, I think it was either 12 or 20 pages that I had just bound at Kinko's the day before in a, you know, some sort of like a black, you know, faux leather, a kind of binding with a spiral, you know, plastic binding on it. And, you know, I wasn't ready to show it then. I wanted to work on it for another 2 years, actually. But the opportunity came up, and my boss from my day job encouraged me to go down to New York and see if I could peddle my book. So I did. So I got lucky.
So when you walked out the door that day, how were you feeling?
It was amazing. It really did feel like a fateful meeting, I guess you could say. And Charlie says the same thing. He said he wanted to take like a mental picture of the scene because he felt like it was the start of something, something really big. And I felt that way too.
Even he knew that.
Yeah, I felt that way too. But of course, that's just a writer's ego and hope, you know, that they've created something that's worthwhile. So I can't really separate whether or not I really believed it versus what I was hoping for.
How much later from that first meeting did your first book come out?
My first book came out about 8 months to a year later, somewhere around there.
And obviously, it took off.
Yeah, what happened was it about 2 weeks after it came out, it got on the New York Times bestseller list, and it's never been off. And so it's, you know, I don't know when this is all going to end, but I've seen, you know, I've seen Behind the Music on VH1 a bunch of times, and I think I'm approaching the half hour mark, which is when storm clouds arise, and, you know, and then by the 55 minute mark, I'm sure I'll be like scrambling to, you know, have some kind of a hit again as I like relive my glory days. So I'm trying to enjoy this right now.
Now, Jeff, I've read about you, though, that none of this has really rocked your world, at least in one respect, in the sense that you live in still sort of the same house and you're not out spending money on crazy cars and crazy clothes. You're sort of a basic guy.
Right. Well, thank you. I live in Plainville, which is a small town in Massachusetts, and I'm the cub master of our Cub Scout pack. I will say, though, that we bought the house next to ours, which is a small house.
It's for your office now, right?
To work in, yeah. So we would not have been able to do that without the success of these books, for sure.
What's your office like now?
It is a karaoke den, honestly. It's a, it's a, you know, it's a family room of this house, which has now, I think, a fog machine and about three disco balls and you know, plastic guitars and things like that for when, you know, for when people come over sometimes on the weekends. And then I, you know, I have a big monitor that overlooks, you know, kind of a backyard. So it's a nice place to work and then to unwind.
We have an email here from Jen, who tweets us this. I want to punch in the throat is what she does. And she writes this: my 8-year-old is Jeff's biggest fan. He's so excited for the chance to meet him today. Hey, how do kids react to you when they walk up to you?
Well, I hope they don't punch me in the throat. I'm a little nervous now.
That's the title of her own cartoon, I think. Yeah.
I know. You know, it's funny because there's no real kids don't have a protocol for meeting an author. So it's usually they're very silent. And then they have their parent, you know, kind of shouting at them to turn around for a picture and stuff like that. So I think it's a stunned confusion in that moment. But what I've really tried to do on this tour is that I found that the signings kind of got too big, and we would have these giant events that would sometimes last like 5 hours long. And so what we're doing this time is I'm going around and visiting having smaller events and getting to meet 100 people at a time because that's a much better format. And then we'll have a big event like we're having tonight at Rainy Day Books.
And when you autograph a book, do you draw a character in it, or does that just take too much time anymore?
If I have been able to do that over the past few days because there have been, you know, very small signings. And yeah. But tonight it will be more of a you know, it will be a mass kind of event. And so I won't be able to draw tonight.
Yeah. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Our guest again, author Jeff Kinney, the New York Times bestselling author of the ever so popular Diary of a Wimpy Kid series. Our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. You know, in the acknowledgments to your latest book, The Third Wheel, you thank your family for a lot of the story ideas that show up here. How much of what you write winds up sort of being autobiographical? Because you said before, a lot of it is. How much of it is?
That's a good question. I would say that maybe – I've never put a number to it before, but I would say that about 60% of the material in my books has some truth, you know, that if my family were to all sit around in a big room, we could pick apart where the different ideas came from. And then sometimes it's just conversational, something that catches my attention or tickles my funny bone. My brother's family was up in Boston a few months ago, and it was really cold, and we bought these sweatshirts that said Boston on them, and very generic. And I thought it would be hysterical if somebody bought a huge supply of t-shirts but had them misprinted, and so they said Botson, you know, Botson. And so that made it into my new book. And so now we've printed up these t-shirts with the misprint, and we're giving them out, you know, tonight as a kind of a promotional thing.
You know, your latest book starts off with Greg remembering what it was like to be in his mom's stomach during pregnancy. I remember telling somebody as a kid, I remember being in my mom's stomach and all the stuff mom did for him, you know, to smarten him up even before he was born. I gather you're saying something about how far some parents go when it comes to playing classical music for their kids before right. they're born and that kind of thing. It gets a little crazy sometimes.
It does get a little crazy, but we did that. You know, we're guilty of doing that. And, you know, something that is I've only developed recently is the ability to laugh at myself. And, you know, I can see how silly it might seem to outsiders that you feel like you're behind as a parent if you're not playing classical music for your, you know, child in utero. But we did that, and we put the microphone on and, you know, and spoke to our unborn children. And, you know, it probably just made them lose a lot of sleep.
Then you have Greg struggling to deal with his younger brother's imaginary friends. And at one point, mom puts one of Manny's imaginary friends in timeout. And the timeout chair turns out to be the nice brand new recliner in the family room.
Right. Yeah. It's funny how much parents will indulge their children. You know, my wife allows my younger son to start going to sleep at night in our bedroom. And he has to have everything just right. This light needs to be on like this, and this fan needs to be on. And then he complains if the TV is on downstairs. And I'm like, go to your own room, you know. You're lucky you're a guest here.
Well, did you or your brothers have imaginary friends when you were growing up?
You know, I had an imaginary friend very briefly. It was kind of a weird thing.
I
believed I saw some child in the woods, and then I told my mother that was my imaginary friend, and then it creeped me out that there was a kid in the woods. So,
yeah,
active imagination there.
You know, you also write about one of those pivotal moments for all middle school kids, which is the terror of being matched up at school with a dance partner and just praying that it's not a certain girl like the one you write about here. Her name is Ruby Bird, who was suspended from school for biting a teacher. And of course, Greg didn't want to be matched up with her. Did you have a Ruby Bird at your school?
Yeah, there was always that girl that was like, there's only one girl in your school who has like gotten suspended, and she's like the most dangerous, person you could possibly imagine. So that's, I created this character named Ruby Bird who has one tooth because the other tooth ended up in the teacher's elbow. So I like that kind of thing, myths that kids create in a way, and stories like that.
Well, I mentioned that Jeff rode up to our studios today in his big tour bus. If you want a picture of what that tour bus looks like, you'll find a picture of it right now on KCUR's Facebook page. So what do you like better, drawing or writing?
Both are really difficult for me, especially because I have very limited time. But I would say I would love drawing if I could do it, if I could sort of, spread it out and to draw for like 2 hours a day or something like that. But, when I draw, I have to draw in such big concentrated spurts that it's no fun at all, and it really takes a lot out of me physically.
Mm-hmm. The hardest part of what you do is coming up with the jokes. Am I hearing that from what you're saying today?
Yeah, it's like when you sit there and you realize on January 1st that you don't have any ideas and you don't know where they're going to come from. With writing, it's not something where I say, well, if I dedicate 8 hours to this a day, I can get the job done. It's the inspiration has to come. And for me, it's not easy. I'm not like other creators from whom ideas just seem to flow.
Yeah. Do you ever find yourself walking onto a playground of a middle school or walking just to see what kids are doing and thinking these days?
Once or twice I have, I remember one time I went to a carnival and showed up just and kind of, watched and observed and took notes. And then
really?
I realized I was like wearing a trench coat. And I was just like, I fit a certain profile,
good.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I stay away from playgrounds as a rule, actually.
Yeah, it's funny if you show up on a playground, the teachers sort of notice right. Strange men showing up there, don't they?
Well, Chuck E. Cheese actually has really good pizza. And one time I went into a Chuck E. Cheese by myself to order pizza, and I realized that I was not really it wasn't the right thing to do.
Yeah. Well, I think you talk about in the new book going into one of those kinds of restaurants and sitting down on an open-faced peanut butter and jelly
right.
sandwich.
Right.
That happens too. Hey, just a final thing. What did you think when Time Magazine named you in 2009 one of the 100 most influential people on the planet? Just amazing.
I think they need to look at their evaluation process. But
a little more closely.
But yeah. I felt very honored by that. So yeah. It's a special thing.
It's been a pleasure to have you here, Jeff.
Thanks so much
for taking time with us. Diary of a Wimpy Kid author Jeff Kinney speaks this afternoon at 4 at Unity Temple on the Plaza. Doors open at 3. Call Rainy Day Books in Fairway for tickets, 913-384-3126. You can find more information about our broadcast at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Tomorrow on the program, mezzo-soprano Joyce DiDonato, and we sit down with Missouri Secretary of State-elect Jason Kander. The show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, and Beth Lipoff. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.